Welcome back to another edition of The Main Event. Today is episode 71, and we have two great guests as usual. Carl Roberson, who is one of the newest signees to the UFC after his impressive first-round knockout at Dana White's Contender Series. He is going to be on the show. We're going to talk to him about that exciting night and what his future holds. Also, we're going to have Young's MMA star, the new amateur lightweight champ, Pat Kelly, 53-year-old Pat Kelly, on the show today. I cannot wait to talk to him.
Yeah, we'll see if he's got some genetics things that we can try to maybe milk his genes and see if we can look as good and as
I'll tell you what.
Cut.
I mean, any guy that's that old, not saying that he's old, but in the grand scheme of things here, if you're just looking at athletically, most people when they get into their early 40s,
right,
they start to retire regardless of the sport. And this is a guy that's out there still competing. He does not look his age at all.
And we'll talk with him and see, like, how long does he want to go into mixed martial arts? Does he see some sort of end in the future and whatnot there? I think he's really intriguing because, again, you don't see a guy of his age compete in mixed martial arts very often, let alone winning a championship. And it seems like he does want to continue. So we'll ask him about what he has planned. And there might be some restrictions, too. We'll see. I know he does do some wrestling coaching as well. So we'll get into that with him. But really intriguing guy and a force to be reckoned with in the Northeast at his division for sure. And we'll see when he's going to defend his title next.
Yeah, I look forward to it. I've been looking forward to this interview for a while now.
Yeah.
So excited to have Pat Kelly on.
Well, let's talk about what's going on in the world of combat sports. And I think one of the biggest topic lines, especially what we are just a couple of weeks away, 2 weeks or so before Conor McGregor finally steps into the squared circle, the boxing ring with Floyd Mayweather. And the biggest news, I think, that came out over the weekend or early on was the Paulie Malignaggi knockdown, pushdown, whatever you want to view it. But the video was released. It was very short with Conor McGregor and Paulie sparring, and it did not look good for Malignaggi by any means.
So wait a second. You're telling me that Conor McGregor is fighting Floyd Mayweather?
Yes.
I haven't heard about this.
By the way, I saw the breakdown. Darren Revelle tweeted out his expected earnings for all the fighters. Conor's going to make expected $100 million off the fight, which is great for him, especially when you're considering that he might make $50 million, maybe $70 million, if he's expected to make $100 million when all the pay-per-view buys are in. That's a huge win for him. Floyd's going to make north of $200 million.
That's insane.
And
insane.
The crazy thing, though, the Ultimate Fighting Championship, by having Conor under contract and allowing him to go into this Mayweather promotion on Showtime pay-per-view, they're also going to get a cut of it, too. And Darren Revelle, again, projected $35 million to be paid out to the UFC just for allowing Conor out of his contract for this boxing match.
That's unbelievable. I mean, kudos to Conor McGregor. People want to get on him about, oh, he talked his way into this. Well, good for him.
Yep.
Because now his family for generations upon generations is going to be set for life.
Yep.
And what an unbelievable spectacle this is going to be. To get back to your original point about this video that came out, I'm not quite sure I understand Malignaggi's stance on this, about how, you know, I understand he's probably embarrassed. Yeah. You know, this is a guy that's a mixed martial artist coming over, and he probably thought he was going to go in there and embarrass Conor McGregor, and that's not what happened. That was not a pushdown. Conor stunned him with a punch and then followed up with another couple of punches, and Malignaggi's down on the ground. That's all that there is to it. Just own up to it. Say, look, yeah, he got the better of me, and move on. But he's making himself look even worse by all this backpedaling and saying, oh no, he didn't beat me, show the full tape. I think we've seen enough.
And on top of that, too, we were just listening to a little bit of his conversation with Ariel Helwani on the MMA Hour, which he makes jest of it quite a bit. It's not an hour. It's 5 hours or so, so we're slowly digesting it here. And he's one of the great foremost experts. For my money, he's one of the best in terms of sports reporting, whether it be mixed martial arts, boxing, or whatever, along with Flow Combat, MMAfighting.com, I think, are some of the biggest entities in the game today, along with us, too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But we were listening to Paul, and he almost sounded like a little bit of a jilted lover. I'm sure things were a little bit different. It was highly edited. They probably got the shot they wanted and then got rid of everything else. But he did seem to be defending himself for 20-plus minutes and saying, like, how Floyd was a little disrespectful—not Floyd, but Conor was a little disrespectful to him. Some of the little histrionics going out and seeing where he was staying at the time before the sparring and all that stuff. He did seem a little bit, I don't know, off kilter for a guy who's a professional boxer, retired for 4 months, but he seemed like he was trying to defend his pride a little bit more so from this 10-second video.
Well, see, and look, this is the thing. Any of these guys, if you're a professional athlete, you have pride. You have an ego. That just comes with the territory, because when you get to that elite level, regardless of what sport it is that you compete in, you need to have an unbelievable confidence in yourself, and that comes with a little bit of an ego. Now, some guys carry that differently. You look like someone like Connor that has that real cockiness and bravado. He carries himself differently than others, but this is what it boils down to for me. Malignaggi's embarrassed. He's embarrassed as a former pro boxer, a former champion, someone who's been at the highest of levels of boxing, and this guy Conor McGregor, who everyone out there is saying doesn't stand a chance when he goes up against a legitimate boxer. Well, Malignaggi's only 36 years old. He's 4 years younger than Floyd, and he got beat, and this is embarrassing for him. And if you want to look at this fight, this makes it even more interesting for me, because I said this before, you know, Connor is a puncher. Granted, he's a mixed martial artist. The movement's different when you take MMA versus boxing. It's just different. You don't have to worry about leg kicks. You don't have to worry about takedowns. You don't have to worry about some of that stuff that you know, you obviously do when you're in the MMA game. Boxing is just throwing hands. But if you go and you look at Connor's career, in the UFC in particular, and you just look at all of his finishes, take away the Max Holloway fight was back in 2013. That was a unanimous decision. Aside from that, and I'm going to get to the Nate Diaz stuff here in a second. Marcus Brimage, round one, knockout. Diego Brandao, round one, knockout. Dustin Poirier, round one, knockout. Dennis Seaver, round two, knockout. Chad Mendez, round two, knockout. Jose Aldo, 13-second knockout. Okay, and then you get to Eddie Alvarez, round two, knockout, who Eddie Alvarez is legit. And then there's the Nate Diaz fights. I mean, Conor McGregor is a striker. This is a guy that it's making me even more excited to see what he can do against Floyd, because he made a former world champion boxer look maybe not so much like a world champion. So it just adds more intrigue for me.
I do have to preface this by saying is we only saw 10 seconds of 12 rounds of the fight, and you do have to take Paulie for his word in saying that, you know what, if they had released all the sparring, which would have been unprecedented, you don't see that in boxing because you try to leave something to mystery in this. It doesn't look good for him in that 10-second clip, but I'm sure he also did some really good work in some of the rounds. And he said after the first four rounds, he thought he dominated the other four rounds. And then, like, the middle part of the fight, he said, the sparring session at least, he did really well. And he felt like he was back into his groove again, and also without 4 months of boxing training before he started the sparring session, jet lag, all this stuff. There's excuses upon excuses. But still, it doesn't look good, but I also don't think it showed the whole story. But again, it gets the fighting intrigue in saying, maybe Conor can win this one. He can go out there. The one thing I will bring up about the UFC fights you mentioned and all the knockouts, it's a little bit different of an animal. For one instance, MMA is fought with gloves a lot smaller than what they're going to be using on the 26, so that's one factor. The other thing someone brought up too, and I know they're trying to get to the 8-ounce gloves, and it's not going to happen. By the time, we're 2 weeks out. There's no chance it's going to happen unless they express rush that through there. But someone brought up, I'm not sure exactly who, but they were trying to describe the differences between MMA fighters and boxers. And I think it does come down to head movement a little bit more, where Floyd's going to have tremendous head movement. He's had it throughout his whole career. And I don't care if he's a 40-year-old. I don't care if he reverts back in time and becomes a 20-year-old. He's still going to have that head movement. And some of the guys that Conor's been able to knock out aren't necessarily, you know, darting and diving around trying to avoid the punches as much. They kind of keep their head a little bit more stagnant because they're disciplined in so many other things. They might not be excellent boxers, for instance. Like, when you see that Aldo fight, though it's very short, it's almost as short as this video released on Malignaggi, it's still, he comes in, he was just trying to beat up Conor because of all the things he had said in the lead-up, and that's part of Conor's game. But then again, did you see his head move when the punch came in? It didn't really. He just took it clean and then went down, and then the fight was over.
Well, that's the thing about Conor, too, and Conor is so precise with his punches, and if Floyd's head movement isn't where it needs to be and Conor connects flush, that could make things really interesting. And I will just say this. Dana White said about the Malignaggi Conor sparring session, he said Conor dominated him.
Yeah, but that's also Dana White. Yeah. It's a showman, too, and I've said this before. In professional wrestling, it's very much a carny type of sport where they try to get the best bang for the buck and they'll oversell things. UFC and some promoters too have to have a carny aspect to it where you're not going to say, well, Malage, you did a good job and he did show Connor he's got some instances. No, he's trying to sell the fight. So I'm not quite sure I take Dana, I respect him, I'm not sure I take him completely serious when he says he dominated it.
And there's definitely some truth in that because Connor is his you know, unicorn. He's the guy that
his golden cow.
Yeah, that's right. He's bringing him over here and this is the big paycheck right here. But, you know, I just think that Connor has all the tools necessary. If you're going to bring an MMA fighter over into the boxing ring and you're going to want him to have the best chance possible to beat a legitimate boxer, I think Conor McGregor's your guy. I can't think of another striker that has impressed me as much and who's so dynamic as Conor is. Anderson Silva used a lot of leg kicks, and he was just like freakishly long, and some of the things that he could do were really impressive. I think Conor's striking is as elite as I've ever seen in MMA. That's one of the reasons why I love him so much. And it's going to be really interesting to see if it does translate over to the boxing game. I think Connor's really tough. I do. I've said this all along, and I know I'm a Connor homer, and I'm not trying to hide that at all. I love the guy. I think he's an amazing fighter. But I do think that, you know, his inner fortitude and his toughness is going to be on display here, because a lot of those two fights against Diaz, what I'm thinking about, a lot of the tiredness that you saw out of him in those fights were because he was getting taken down, and that takes everything out of you. It really does, and just changes the whole dynamics of a fight when you're working off your back trying to get back up to your feet. So I don't know. I'm just interested to see. I wish I could press fast forward and get August 26 here.
I just don't know if the conditioning is going to be a huge factor for Connor, comparatively speaking, to Floyd, because he's used to fighting 12-round fights. That's sort of his MO. He doesn't knock people out. So that does bring up a good point, though. UFC fighters, who would excel the most in boxing, do you think? Because I've got a couple names that come to mind. Two, for instance.
Yeah, Junior Dos Santos in the heavyweight division.
Well, the heavyweight division, I think, would make a lot of sense, because what do most heavyweights do? They're not going to move around a ton. It's not like a Muhammad Ali, for instance. Mm-hmm. I think Stipe Miocic.
Yeah, I completely agree.
He's got that power, and he's trying to get Anthony Joshua to get a fight, too, saying, like, hey, let's do another one at the heavyweight ranks. I think the heavyweights could probably transition over a little easier, necessarily, than the featherweights or so.
Yeah.
But how about it, like a Nate Diaz? Because he can take a pounding, too.
God,
and if he can survive a barrage, he could level some people.
Nate is one of those guys, too, that I think the more he gets beat up, the more ticked off he gets, and the more he's like, all right, I'm ready to go, let's go. You know what I mean? Like, he's one of those guys that's just a complete freak of nature in that regard. The more you beat him up, the stronger he gets, it seems.
Could you imagine him versus Horn in a fight where he's smack-talking him a little bit, gets punched, and be like, is that all you get? Is that all you get, mofo? It would just be phenomenal. Just great theater, too, because you don't have to worry about the takedowns or anything. It would just be him throwing punches. The one thing, though, with Nate, I don't think he defends himself enough.
No, he doesn't. I mean, Connor pieced him up a lot when they fought. And so, you know, again, that's the thing. You know, boxers, they just train their hands. That's it.
Right.
And mixed martial artists, they have to devote time to every single discipline. So, you know, it's a disadvantage for the mixed martial artist, 100%, no doubt about it. I just think that Connor is one of those guys that's just truly gifted, and if anybody can make the transition over and have a shot at winning, I think it's him.
All right, let's go over some other news and notes that we were talking about beforehand. Frank Mir signing with Bellator. Mm-hmm. He's still ineligible to fight until April, but are you interested in seeing Mir back inside a cage?
Yeah, you know, it's funny to me, too, because you see all these UFC guys that are going over to Bellator, and they usually win belts. So we just saw Ryan Bader do that, and I fully expect Rory McDonald to be holding gold in Bellator here very soon. Frank Mir, too. I mean, he's one of those guys that he's so well-rounded, and his jiu-jitsu is out of this world good. So, yeah, I'm interested to see Frank Mir. I love Bellator. I think it gives us an added bonus for watching MMA. You got the gold standard in UFC, and Bellator is right there. It's almost like their little brother that is trying to, you know, compete with the big dog, and, you know, maybe eventually they will be on par. Who knows?
The one thing I do want to see Bellator, and it might be the major shot to say that we're finally competition, is an elite-level player in the UFC jumping ship. We've seen a couple of guys who are on the fringe. Musashi's a pretty significant name.
Absolutely. I think Rory McDonald's a big name.
Right.
That's huge.
But I'm talking about the top of the top. Yeah. Like, let's say, let's just throw a name
like
out there.
Like Tyron Woodley or someone like
that. Yeah, like he loses the belt on his next title fight, and then he's just like, I've had enough with Dana. Mm-hmm. I want to be promoted. And then he left. Mm-hmm. That would be one. Or like a current title holder just saying, you know what? My deal's up. I'm just going to go over to Bellator because I can make a ton more money off my sponsorships and wearing my ring gear out there as opposed to wearing this Reebok deal where I'm only going to get pennies compared to what I could be making. So that would be the one shot because some of the guys they've had, like the McDonald's, the Musashis, they're great. But then also you pair in with like Amir, who might be a little past his prime from what he was at the heights, and even like a Chael Sonnen.
Mm-hmm.
I love Chael, but is he the same guy he was even a decade ago?
Oh, of course not.
Right.
You know, but he's still a draw because he can talk with the best of them, Brian. Don't you ever forget it.
Yeah. And he puts eyeballs on Bellator, which they desperately needed. By the way, Bellator is going to be coming back to our backyard in New England at the Mohegan Sun, so that's looking good. And Musashi is going to fight on that one.
Very cool.
Heather Hardy also, after making her MMA debut, is going to have her second fight there in Mohegan Sun, too. So
when's the date on that?
I think it's in October. Don't quote me. I think it's the 22nd.
The 22nd.
I think it's the 22nd.
Okay.
But, hey, looks pretty fun.
We'll
and
make sure we can get down there for that.
Yeah, it'd be a fun card to cover for sure, especially Bellator returning back there for a little bit. A couple other quick notes. GSP, he also talked publicly recently, and he had mentioned that he's talked with Dana, and then after the Bisping fight, he's had conversations that when he said he wins the belt over Michael Bisping, which I'm anticipating that fight quite a bit, he said that he's going to have to defend his title, which means Bobby Knuckles, Robert Whittaker, would get the unification match.
Yeah.
Now, do you think that's a fight that you'd be really interested to see, that GSP could get that loss to retire him?
Let me tell you something. George St. Pierre is my all-time favorite mixed martial artist. I think that he has a very good chance of beating Michael Bisping. Okay.
Yeah. I think he will beat Bisping.
I agree. I don't think Robert Whittaker is a good fight for him.
Yep.
I think he, if I'm George St. Pierre, okay, I say, listen, Dana, I won a middleweight belt. Now here, you can have it back. I want to go get my welterweight championship back because I will not fight scary Robert Whittaker. It's not a good fight for him. I don't like it. I think George is smart enough to know that Whittaker's a big dude.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for weight classes. I harp on this all the freaking time. George St. Pierre is... he's a big welterweight. He's a small middleweight.
Mm-hmm.
He's gonna be the smaller guy against Michael Bisping. You know, this is gonna be an interesting matchup. I still think George gets the job done, but I think Robert Whittaker is scary. Scary.
I don't like that I'm agreeing with you over the last couple episodes, but I wholeheartedly agree. I don't think he likes that matchup, and if he does win the belt, I think he would vacate it and let Whittaker be the...
I mean, what are they going to say? No.
Undisputed champion.
What are they going to say? They're not going to force... Dana's always said you can't force guys to fight.
Right.
And if George is like, no, I'm sorry. Like, I won the belt. I wanted to do what Conor did and win a second belt and cement my legacy. Now I'm vacating it, and you can have the interim matchup. Robert Whittaker can unify his championship with whoever the number one guy is.
And I don't want to see him versus Tyron. No offense to Woodley, but I think that would, if Woodley has been kind of designated as a boring fighter to a lot of UFC fans, and to Dana White, for instance, I don't want to see him face GSP because I don't think, sure, it would be a fun fight on paper, but I'm not sure it would be a fun fight for the fans who want to see these guys go up and punch each other in the face.
I completely agree with that too. And if Woodley was hesitant to throw punches against Maia from afraid to go down and get submitted, he's going to be even more hesitant to throw punches against George, because what George does best is you make one mistake, you're down on the ground, he's on top of you, and when he gets on top of you, not many guys can get back up, and his ground and pound is amazing. So yeah, it could turn into a very boring fight.
So fantasy booking: GSP wins the belt, he vacates it, Whittaker wins it, then maybe if Bisbing's not too worse for wear, you have Yoel Romero versus Bisping, the winner faces Robert Whittaker. I know Whittaker still needs some time off anyway, so you get healthy and then face the winner of that one maybe in the summertime of next year, and then GSP goes down to 170 and faces Conor McGregor.
Conor McGregor, huh?
That's a fight I'd want to see.
Wow, that would be...
That's a big money fight,
that's
too.
A huge money fight. I think George is got to be the favorite in that fight, though.
You think so?
I do.
I don't know. I don't know, old GSP versus the young buck in Conor McGregor?
Hey, look, I love me some Conor. But
you'd
styles,
be so conflicted, too. I know.
I wouldn't know what to do. I'd be beside myself. But, you know, styles make fights.
Right.
And my point with that fight is this. Chad Mini Mendez, he took Conor down and...
But then he got murdered by Conor in that second round.
But if Mendez can take Conor down, George definitely can. And if George St. Pierre on top of you versus Chad Mendez on top of you are two completely different things.
I don't know. I do like Conor's progression in MMA. I don't think he's going to do well in the boxing ring. I've been on the record saying I don't think it's going to be a great fight. I think Conor's going to lose quite decisively to Floyd, but I do like his projections at 170.
You watch your lip, Ryan. don't burn my hopes here.
Last thing I want to talk about here is Daniel Cormier also spoke publicly for the first time, really on the record as well, after his title loss to John Jones, and he did say some interesting things. He mentioned there have been some talks he could move to heavyweight. He's also mentioned that Jimmy Manoa might be on the table. Where would be the most intriguing fight for you to see Daniel Cormier step back in the octagon next? Is it at the heavyweight ranks, avoiding Cain for the time being and just trying to work his way up, or is it still fighting at the light heavyweight?
Man, you know, it's a really tough thing because I love DC, and any one mistake in an MMA fight changes the fight 100%, right?
Yep.
That's what happened in that second John Jones fight. The first go-around, they went the distance.
Yep.
This second fight, in my book, I thought Cormier was at least in the lead, in my opinion, before that head kick landed. If that head kick didn't land, who knows how that fight would have ended. So it's just really disappointing, and I know it sucks, and DC has to, you know, go drop back down a little bit, and he needs to beat all the top contenders again before he's going to get that rematch, and then that third fight isn't going to be as, you know, exciting to the masses because he's already lost to him twice.
And honestly, he'll be 2 years older probably
right
at that point.
And that's tough, man. So I'm not quite sure what the right thing to do with Cormier is. I think if there's a super fight at heavyweight, that would be interesting. I think if he gets a rematch with Alexander Gustafsson, that fight was amazing between those two. That would be something I'd like to see. I think there's a lot of different ways you can go with DC.
Okay, so I'm going to put two fights on the table. I'll let you choose. He stays at light heavyweight. He faces Jimmy Manoa. That's option A. Option B is goes up to heavyweight and faces Fabricio Werdum.
I'd like to see him against Werdum because I think he smokes Manoa.
Yeah. And I also think him moving up to heavyweight with Cain not necessarily in the title picture right now, he might still have to work his way up, or who knows? Who knows exactly what's going to be the next situation there in heavyweight? Who knows? Cain could be in line for the next one. But I would like to see that fight. Plus, the Rumble fight up in Buffalo, the towel incident happened, and DC struggled to make weight, and he lost 3 pounds in like a minute. You can say what you want to about maybe he cheated the scales a little bit, but I'd like to see him not have to cut and just be able to be as conditioned as he wants to be, as heavy as he wants to be, and go out there and face a guy like Werdum, who desperately needs a win after losing to Overeem. I think that would be really intriguing. And if DC loses, no harm, no foul. He could either go back down to light heavyweight, or he could just end his career at that point.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. There's so many ways that you can go with DC. I just feel like, man, you know, the light heavyweight division, I've been saying this for a little while now, but to me, it's as light as it's been maybe ever.
It's top heavy.
That's right. It's top heavy. After the first five guys, it drops off drastically. There needs to be an injection of excitement into the light heavyweight division, like Mike Rodriguez, for example.
Right.
You know, someone like that who just, you know, made a huge name for himself at Tuesday Night Contender Series with that unbelievable knee.
Yep.
You know, someone like that that's built, he's kind of built like John Jones, you know. If he can come in and beat a couple of big names, we need an injection of life into the light heavyweight division, in my opinion.
How about John Jones moves up to heavyweight, beats Brock Lesnar, faces Stipe, wins the title, DC beats, I don't know, Werdum and someone else, and then you have the heavyweight title match between DC and John Jones.
I mean, we can dream, can't we? That you know what? That could potentially happen. It really could.
And that would add a new wrinkle and would actually make people a little bit more enticing to see the third fight.
I just don't think that Stipe is going to lose anytime soon. I mean, who's going to beat him?
He got rocked by Overeem. I honestly thought he could have lost that fight against Overeem in his first... Yeah. What was it? It would have been his second title defense, right?
Yeah,
no, it was his first title defense in Cleveland.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I just... You know, we were watching that fight together at Buffalo Wild Wings.
Oh, yeah, right after the NEF event,
that's right.
Yeah.
And when he got rocked, to me, yeah, he definitely got rocked, but he was never, like, out. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, Overeem's huge. He's a monster. He's going to rock his opponents.
Right.
That's par for the course. But Stipe took it like a champ, and it ticked. It almost like it made him more angry. And when he got up and he knocked Overeem down, the way that he finished that fight, my God, Stipe Miocic is the real deal. And if he defends his belt, you know, two or three more times, we might be talking about the greatest heavyweight ever. I think he probably beats Fedor, maybe in Fedor's prime.
Well, I'm going to pump the brakes. I love Stipe, but I'm going to pump the brakes until I see him win at least a couple more title defenses first, because I still think he's susceptible to being knocked out. I think there is a possibility. I'm not sure who will do it, but you never know. Any given night, someone can get clipped, and that could end his run. And then we'd be looking at it and saying, hey, was Stipe maybe a little overrated? I don't know. We'll see exactly. But I still love Stipe. I just want to hold the horses a little bit before we go on to that.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't disagree with that, but I mean, the train is moving, man. This is
hey,
a guy that...
I've been on the Stipe bandwagon since I was able to interview him like 2 years ago, and he was one of the worst guys I've ever talked with on the phone. But
he's got a real raspy voice. Thanks for having me on. Almost kind of like a little...
Hey, Stipe, great mustache. Thanks, man.
I mean, since his loss to Junior Dos Santos at UFC on Fox 13, that was in late 2014. He beat Mark Hunt. That was in the fifth round of that fight. And then a bunch of round one knockouts, you know, Andre Orlovsky, Fabricio Verdum, Overeem, and now JDS. He got that win back. He's just getting better, man.
He is. And though this is a little dead time in terms of actual UFC events, there's so much going on, and it's always fun to talk about. It's good to put on the booking hat and seeing into future a little bit and trying to do what Sean Shelby does all the time.
How cool would that be?
Right? I mean, if Sean ever gets tired, we'd love to do it.
Yeah, get at us, Sean. I know you're listening.
All right, let's get into the interviews because we've got some really good ones, including what's coming up right next here, Ryan.
That's right. We'll be right back with one of the newest additions to the UFC roster, Carl Roberson. The main event is sponsored by Sea Dog Brewing Company. The Sea Dog is located on 26 Front Street on the Penobscot River here in Bangor. You can call them at 947-8009, or you can find them at seadogbrewing.com. A couple of new exciting beers you need to go check out at the Sea Dog. They have a new Sea Dog Pale Ale that is just delicious, and also a Deep Stowage IPA that is very popular and bringing a lot of people down to the Sea Dog to try these new two beers. While you're down there, you might as well check out another exciting event that the Sea Dog is going to be hosting. As always, they are going to have their second annual Sunfish Festival that is Saturday, August 19th from 12 p.m. all the way till 10 p.m. at night. And they have a few exciting acts for you. Hambone is going to be performing from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. DJ MC will be there from 4 to 7, and the Ultra Boys will be coming on at 9:30 p.m. to close out the night. All this is going to be happening at 26 Front Street in Bangor. The Sea Dog is where it's at. Make sure you go check it out. Sea Dog. We are back at the main event. Ryan Jarrell and Brian Stackpole here. Joining us now is one of the newest members to the UFC roster. After a 15-second knockout win at Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, he inked his UFC contract and will now fight Darren Stewart at UFC Fight Night 120 in November. Carl Roberson is on the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now, let's start with your huge KO win over Ryan Spann at Contender Series. Were you expecting a quick finish here, or did you plan on a much tougher fight against Spann?
I'm always looking for the finish, truthfully, but we prepare for anything. So I was ready to go the distance or take the opportunity if he gave it to me. He gave me the opportunity, so I had to take him out.
How are you feeling mentally leading up to this huge fight on such a big stage?
Mentally, I'm strong. Mentally, I'm ready. It's a stressful feeling at first, but when you start to accept it and really embrace the grind, it becomes easier.
What was the media and all the stuff that you had to do like going into this fight? Was it a little bit different than what you've been used to so far in your career?
Yeah, truthfully, only media I've ever really had to do was for Glory, and that still wasn't as intense as this media. So it was like a shell shock. Like, oh, wait a minute, this is real.
Did you get a chance to, you know, meet anybody that you've really looked up to before the fight, and you know, get some cool pictures or talk to the big boss and Dana?
Yeah, I talked to Dana. That was after the fight. I always wanted to meet him. You know, Uriah, he's definitely an inspiration because you know he does so much for the sport. And the Snoop,
that's right.
Meet Snoop, so that's one of the biggest points.
Did Snoop have like a cloud of something like around him as he walked through the room,
yeah, pretty much. It was like you might catch contact if you stand too close.
Now, we've talked to other fighters, too, who have impressed Snoop Dogg. Did he have his team come up to you and reach out because of your performance on that Tuesday Night Contender Series?
Yeah, he was like, man, I was rooting for you because his boy was betting against me. So there was like, they had a little bet going inside. He's like, he was rooting for you. He said, I was rooting for you. And then he gave me a nickname, the Golden Elbow. He said, Golden Elbow.
Is that going to catch on? Is that going to be your new nickname moving forward?
No, it's not, but it was nice to have.
Let's talk about your current nickname, Baby K. How did that come about?
The first part of it is because I'm a junior to my dad, and his name is Carl too, so I'm the baby Carl. And everybody I've been around, I've always been the youngest. I always like hung around young, older people, more wise people, and I always had a savage mindset, so they always used to call me a little killer. So Baby K came out. I'm a young killer, so they call me Baby K.
I like it a lot. And, you know, obviously, Baby K, that fits you great, too, as far as where you're at right now in your career, because you're still very, you know, early on in your career when you think about it. And having said that, when that comes to mind, when you're on such a big stage like this at a UFC show on UFC Fight Pass, did you feel any extra pressure than normal to perform?
Yeah, it always comes. Like, when you're so close to your dream, like you're so close to something that you really wanted to accomplish, always that extra pressure. Like, you need to show up. You need to do this. You need to do this. You need to perform. And having that in the back of your mind, even when you're training, it makes you go harder, makes you push harder. There's still a whole lot of pressure and a lot of weight on your shoulders.
Yeah, and you sure came out and put on one heck of a performance. It was a quick fight, but you, like you said, he left you that opening and you capitalized. What did Dana say to you after the fight? Obviously, you got the contract, but is there anything specific that he said that stood out to you that really made you feel good going forward in your UFC career?
Not specifically. It was like a funny moment. Like when I was in the ring, he was like, "How much do you weigh right now?" I'm like, "I'm 211." He was like, "Yeah, you look kind of small for light heavyweight." I'm like, "Yeah." So once he said that, like, I know I'm going to 185. I don't really have a choice. Me ask a question like that.
How difficult will that be for you? Do you think to maintain, maybe stay a little bit smaller to make 185?
I used to fight. I started off my career at 185. I did it 3 times, but most of my fights were short notice, and having to cut weight and then not cut weight, like a lot of people didn't want to fight me, so they back out last minute. So having to cut weight and then gain weight and then cut weight was too stressful on the body, so I decided to go 205 till I got to the UFC.
Yeah, and you fought some really tough guys. One individual that you fought who we've actually had on the show before is Derek Brown, and you beat him with an arm lock in the first round at CFF 65. So you have been taking on all comers so far in your career, and it's obviously got you to the point where you're at now. Who made the trip with you to Vegas to see this, your biggest fight of your career?
My coach, Brian Wright, my brother, training partner, Corey Anderson, and my girlfriend, Mackenzie.
And did you how excited were they for you afterwards? What was that feeling like? Because it must have been quite an awesome feeling to get this win and get the contract in front of your loved ones.
Yeah, they were ecstatic. They were more excited than I was. my girlfriend was shocked. She was lost words. My boy Corey was like, "There you go. That's what I'm talking about. Finally." And my coach, he was lost too. He was like, "I didn't see those elbows coming."
What is it like fighting in that environment? We talked with a couple of people who've been on the Contender Series already, and they said it's interesting because there's not a lot of crowd there. It's just a few amount of people. But what is it like fighting in front of maybe 20 or 30 people total?
It's different. It is. I think it's more stressful fighting under that little bit of crowd than it is fighting in front of a big crowd. That little crowd is like you got to really, like, calm yourself down. Like, sometimes you can get lost in the music on a walkout. You didn't have that. And sometimes, like, the noise from the crowds kind of cancel everything out. You didn't have that. So it's like you're aware of everything at all times. So you have to really, like, be mentally there, mentally strong to be able to perform and walk out calmly and keep yourself focused.
Now, obviously, I'm sure the goal for you was to make it to the UFC and make some noise and maybe eventually here win a belt at some point soon. But you're only 5-0 as a pro. Did you expect to be here this soon in your career?
I expected it. Well, I had hopes of it, I would say. I had hopes for working all the hard work that you put in and fighting such high competition. The only person I fought who had close as many fights as I did was my first fight. And that was my debut. Otherwise, I was fighting high prospects, undefeated people, national champ wrestlers. And I hope that me taking out the top competition get me noticed faster.
So tell our listeners who don't know much about you right now, tell them a little bit about how you got into the sport and what camp that you're training out of and who your coaches and your main training partners are.
I got into the sport at a young age. I was boxing and everything, like a little rowdy, a little street fighting and everything. And my mom took me to a gym and said, "This is what you want to do." And I did. So I tried it out. The coach didn't work out and everything. So me walking around the bad area, I found my coach, Brian Wright, walking to the gym. And it's crazy because me and my coach, Brian Wright, didn't see eye to eye at first. He actually really didn't even like me that much. And then we had our first amateur fight. He see me training. He said, "Okay, you want to fight? You have to do this, this, and that." And I did it, so that showed that I was actually serious about it. We had our first amateur fight, and it was all downhill from there. It was easy going. We pretty much just got a bond. So he's less of a coach and more family now.
And so who are some of your main training partners now that helped you get ready to reach your goal here, which is, to get in the UFC?
Yeah, I train out of Killer BCSA in Oakhurst, but my sister or brother school is Nick Catone MMA. I train with Corey Anderson, Rex Harris. He fights for LFA, World Series. Let's see, Anton, he just came down to spar. He's fighting on the Contender Series. He's a light heavyweight champ of CFFC. So I have a high stable of people. I have Frankie Egger, Marlon Morales. They're all surrounding me. So I'm surrounded by a good group of guys.
Wow, yeah, Frankie Egger, Marlon, and Corey Anderson, those are some huge names. What have you been able to pick up specifically, or is there a certain trait that you've learned from being around those guys, something that's helped you progress in your career?
Truthfully, when you think you work hard and then you see someone else who works two times as hard, so it makes you work even harder, that's one of the things I picked up from those guys. Those guys never stop. It's like a movie, truthfully. These guys never stop. Mental game is strong. They always have a good work ethic. They're always there for each other. And that's one of the things I picked up. They always help each other when it's needed, push each other, and always take the extra mile, do stuff that other fighters won't do, put the extra work in that the other fighters won't do.
How does sparring go when you and Corey Anderson lock horns?
Me and Corey, since we're more like brothers now, it's a fight. Like, we go in and bang out. We try not to, but once one of us hit each other the right way, you get that little smirk on your face. You're like, okay, now we're going to have to bite down the mouthpiece and push the pace.
Yeah, he is. He's one to watch. He's definitely been in the game for a while now, and a really, really exciting fighter. Can't wait to see him get in there again next. I'd love to ask you, Carl, outside of MMA, what are some of your hobbies? What is it that you like to do?
Me, I'm kind of an adrenaline junkie. I like to snowboard, quad, off-road, any off-road vehicle. I like to spend a lot of time with my daughter, take her places, watch her do gymnastics, try new things, and spend time with my girl pretty much. I'm a family man and an adrenaline junkie, so it's a weird mix.
How old is your daughter?
She's 6 now.
Oh, okay, yeah. So you're getting to that point now where you're having to take her to a lot of different hobbies that she has and spend time with helping her get into school and whatnot. That's got to take up a lot of your time.
Yeah, it does, but you got to enjoy all aspects of life, so I love it.
Absolutely.
And how supportive is your family of your mixed martial arts career? Because I know some families don't like the violence in it, but how would you say yours is?
At first, they didn't really support it because they didn't really believe in it. Like, violence, you can find something else to do. But after they see my work ethic and me come home with wins, they kind of fell in love with it. Like, okay, I'm going to support you as much as possible. So they like it now.
Do you feel like that's sometimes the stigma associated with mixed martial arts where people don't understand it? They think you're just brawling in a back room somewhere. And then when they finally watch it, they realize it's just the combat sports version of like a basketball event where you've got these best athletes that are just competing out there at a high level in a very contained, safe environment.
Say that again?
Do you feel like that people don't understand mixed martial arts, but when they do, they really appreciate what you're able to do in mixed martial arts?
Yeah. Pretty much. When you don't really understand it, they say, oh, well, especially a lot of street fighters, they say, oh, well, I can do that, this, and that. I'm like, it's a whole different ballgame, just street fighting. The people who get it, they really appreciate it. The people who get it, they ask a lot more questions, like, how do you do this, like, your mental game, like, how are you able to even step in the cage in front of all those people? And I like talking to those people the most.
Now, Carl, speaking of your mental game, obviously getting ready for a fight, it takes a ton of discipline. So having said that, what is your favorite food? The food that you like to eat, like right when you're done a fight, after all the hard work is done, what is it you like to dive into the most and really kind of allow yourself to have a cheat meal in? And how difficult is it to stay away from some of that stuff during training camp?
My work ethic is pretty strong, so when it's in training camp, it's grind mode, so it's not really tough because you make this your choice. This is the life you chose to live, so you got to deal with what you have to deal with. But after the fight, one of my favorite meals to dive into is mac and cheese. I love mac and cheese, man.
Yeah, you can't beat that. I know you like mac and cheese, Brian.
Yeah, mac and cheese, pizza, I'll have a donut. I actually have a donut here sitting that I'm just kind of thinking about eating, but I'm not going to, and I'm not going to say anything more because I know you're probably still watching your weight and everything else.
Yeah,
nothing better than a big old bowl of mac and cheese, in my opinion.
Yeah, seriously. He knows the deal.
And you know what frustrates me about my buddy Brian here is he can eat and eat and eat. He can eat whatever the heck he wants, and he doesn't put on a pound. I look at a big bowl of mac and cheese, and I gain 2 pounds. So I guess we're all a little different, right?
Yeah, seriously, I hate that.
Now, Carl, your UFC debut will be November 11th. When does training camp officially start for you?
Probably end of August, beginning of September.
And obviously, I mentioned in the intro here, you're going to be facing a tough guy in Darren Stewart. What have you learned about him? Have you watched tape already? What kind of a fighter do you think he is?
Yeah, I looked at some tape. He's a brawler, real aggressive, not a lot of footwork. Standing still, but he throws heavy punches and a fast back leg. So I watched a little bit of video on him.
So where do you think that you hold the advantages in this fight?
Oh, definitely my stand-up, definitely. Stand-up movement and generalship and fight IQ. He seems more like a brawler, like he just tries to push the pace, but he doesn't really think. He's just out there just throwing punches, and hopefully he catches somebody.
So you believe you're a lot more technical than he is, and you'll be able to finish him on the feet?
Yes, definitely.
So prediction, maybe another first-round finish?
Hey, if he slips up, that's what's going to happen.
I like it. Well, we definitely can't wait to see you in the UFC cage for the first time. Before we let you go, Carl, we got to get your thoughts on the huge spectacle that is Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. You're a striker yourself. Obviously, two different sports. Conor has excelled at mixed martial arts, but boxing is very different. What do you see happening on August 26th?
I always give Conor a puncher's chance, truthfully, because he's a big dude and he hits hard. And Floyd Mayweather is old, but at the end of the day, this is boxing. This is, you just got two hands, and Conor's not used to just dumbing down his attributes like that.
So Floyd has mentioned that if this fight is interesting or however it shakes out, that he'd be game for stepping into the octagon afterwards. Do you think that's a smart idea for Floyd?
He's not doing that. I think he's just talking. He's definitely not going to do that. He's too mentally weak for MMA. I don't think he has a heart for that.
What would be a quicker finish, Connor in boxing or Floyd inside the MMA cage?
Floyd definitely inside the MMA cage.
Yeah. I'm on the same thoughts as you, my friend. It was a pleasure having you on today. Before we let you go, anyone you'd like to thank to help you prepare for this fight to get you into the UFC and realize, I'm sure, a lifelong dream for yourself?
Yeah, I want to thank my coach, Brian Wright, because truthfully, without him, I probably wouldn't even be here right now. My bro Corey Anderson for pushing me. My girlfriend Mackenzie for supporting me, knowing that how fighters get when they get in the start getting close to fight time. And yeah, all my supporters, man, I love y'all. Thank you.
Well, it's a pleasure having you on. We look forward to your debut fight coming up here November 11th, and we'll get you back on at some point down the line.
All right, looking forward to it.
Have a good weekend.
You too.
This is Brian Stackpole here from the Main Event, just giving you a friendly reminder to follow us on all the social media spheres, and also be sure to like our Facebook page as well. The Main Event is your place for mixed martial arts news, not just here in the state of Maine, not just in New England, but all throughout the nation and throughout the globe as well. We've had listeners from Africa, Europe, Asia, and even South America, not to just limit it to North America and the state of Maine. Listeners throughout the world, go to the Main Event for all their news and notes, and you should too. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Be sure to subscribe to iTunes. And while you're there at the Main Event on iTunes, give us a little like, give us some comments, rate us as well, because that helps us provide you the best MMA content from this local, regional, and national feel of things. So the Main Event is your one-stop source. And again, go to iTunes, subscribe, rate, and make sure you like us on Facebook, too, because we've got some big announcements coming up in the fall as well to give you even more of what you love here from the Main Event with myself, Brian Stackpole, and Ryan Jarrell.
On the show now is the new NEF amateur lightweight champion. After besting former champ Rafael Velado in a three-round war at NEF 29, Young's MMA product Pat Kelly brought another belt back to the champion factory. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Hey, thank you very much for having me, guys.
It's a pleasure. I got to address the elephant in the room before we go any further here. You're 52 years old. You're going to be 53 next Friday, and you're in ridiculous shape. I'm not sure I've ever seen a guy that is of your age, not saying that you're old, but to be in the shape that you're in. So my question is, have you ever eaten a pizza in your life?
I have a long time ago. I tell you what, I think a lot of it's genetics and work ethic, and those two things combined, you know, being very strict and very disciplined leads to me to be able to be, you know, have a physical condition that is kind of nice to have, you know, when you're in your early to pushing mid-50s.
On an average week, how much would you say you work out?
I'm about an everyday guy, but, you know, on like a Sunday, I'm not much stretching a lot. I've really gotten into stretching, so when I'm not either hitting the road or doing my MMA workout that I've designed down here, I tend to stretch it quite a bit and walk. I've been walking with my kids quite a bit, so that's really my downtime. But usually it's weights and body weights and lots of running, lots and lots and lots of running.
Now, what does your diet typically look like on a week-to-week basis? Are there certain foods that you stick to, and is there certain foods or drinks that you stay away from?
Yeah, I stay away from basically all the sweets and the soda. I mean, and bread, just zero bread, no bread or anything. I do eat carbs. I mean, I will have pasta, but I'm really a fish kind of guy, haddock and cod, and egg whites for sure. And I've really gotten into nuts, you know, whether it's macadamia nuts, some good roasted peanuts, my favorite cashews, and occasionally I'll throw some M&Ms in there to spice up, you know, the mix a bit, but I eat very, very light throughout the whole day, very, very light. So if I make half a dozen eggs, I'll have a couple egg whites in the morning and with my coffee, and then I might have a couple for a snack and a couple later in the afternoon. So I got to be honest, you know, I'm always hungry, but that makes me hungry for training too. So that gnawing hunger allows me to want to push even harder.
Now, when you do want to have a cheat day or a cheat meal, how often does that even happen, and what would you cheat with?
Well, I'm very partial to cakes and whoopie pies. And so, you know, it can happen once or twice a week, you know, to stay, you know, not much, but half of a whoopie pie, split it with my kids, or sometimes just a bite of something that's like, wow, that was good. But I'm a big ice cream fan, too. Mm. I'm a big Cherry Garcia ice cream fan. I mean, I can knock two or three of those back a day easily. But when I do cheat, oftentimes I'll have a good-sized bowl of that and parlay the rest out to my three kids that are at home.
I'm about to say, Pat, you are a Mainer through and through. Whoopie pie is the dessert of Mainers for sure. And you say you live on the coast, too. Whereabouts do you live?
I'm in Rockport, which is about 45 minutes east from Augusta. We're right on the coast, on the water.
And on top of that, you also coach wrestling, too. Whereabouts do you do that?
I coach at Camden Hills Regional High School.
And Pat, you have quite a historic background as competing as a wrestler. So tell us a little bit about how you got started doing that and some of the accomplishments that you've been able to get.
Well, that's a really good question. Back in the mid-70s, when I was in sixth grade, it was just a two-week program that was being ventured for when Camden was first starting their program. So I tried it, and I just, you know, I kind of fell in love with it right then in terms of the one-on-one, the kind of positions that you'd have to put yourself in on the mat in terms of getting out of something tight, getting into something, and I was really enamored by the one-on-one. So I took off through that through junior high, and in high school it was just trying to win state titles and get better, perhaps a college scholarship, which was really in my dreams, but it didn't come to fruition. So after high school, winning one state title, you know, with some injuries and some close losses, I went to UMaine, and I settled in there and was able to really have a wonderful time wrestling for the University of Maine. 4 years, Division I. So we traveled all over New England, part of the East Coast, and was able to win a New England title there and make it to the finals three times. Get to wrestle in Iowa, you know, the mecca of wrestling, University of Iowa, and compete against some of the best in the country. So I've really had, for me, a very historic career. I've met some incredible people, traveled some wonderful and beautiful places, and I've had some great experiences, all because of this sport called wrestling. And so I could probably never give back to the sport what it's given me, but I try to with the young wrestlers I have at the high school level, really try to, you know, bestow upon them, you know, that wrestling is really an idea. The sport, yes, but it's an idea that if you push yourself to your limit and reach further, then you will grow and grow and grow and prepare you for this thing called life. And that's where it took me through high school and college and eventually down the road many, many years later to the idea that I'd like to try MMA and kind of put that into the mix and compete. And so the last 4 years I've been doing that.
Yeah, you know,
so I'm a very big fan of the sport of wrestling, coach, and that what it can give to people.
Wrestling has always been something that I've looked up to and respected my whole life. My father was an accomplished wrestler in West Virginia, and to me, wrestling is probably the number one discipline as far as being proficient at in MMA that you need nowadays, because a lot of times when the fight gets in the clinch or it goes to the ground, a wrestler has a significant advantage to end up getting on top. You know, and you look at guys today, and you look at wrestling historically with guys like, you know, Cale Sanderson, who's like a pioneer, and, right. and someone like Brock Lesnar, who has made the transition over into MMA, former heavyweight mm-hmm. champ. What are your thoughts when you look at Lesnar as a mixed martial artist? Obviously, he's an unbelievably accomplished collegiate wrestler and has done wonderful things in the sport. Do you think that he still has some left in him, and is there a chance that if he does fight John Jones, did you give him a shot because he's a significantly bigger man?
As far as Brock Lesnar, on the first part of the question, I think he is a physical specimen. I think he works hard, trains hard, and he's got the mentality of a winner. With regards to if he comes back, I think he's still got some more in the tank, and I think that because he is bigger, obviously that's an advantage, but I think he could give anybody a go in the right moment if he trains hard enough and he's prepared well enough. Now, I know that over the years it's been said he doesn't have much of a chin. Well, some people just don't. You know, I mean, not everybody's got the strongest chin. Not everybody's got the whole package, and you don't always need the whole package. I think he's got enough to do what it takes to get the job done should he get the opportunity and put in the hours, put in the work.
You know what's interesting, too, is my buddy Brian here, he's a huge wrestling fan. He is clamoring for this big Brock Lesnar-John Jones matchup. And to me, I kind of feel like, not necessarily that Brock doesn't have the greatest chin. To me, it was almost like when he got hit in the midsection that he'd crumble. And a lot of people felt, including Brock himself, felt like his bout with diverticulitis really depleted his ability to take punishment and to stay in these high-level mixed martial arts fights. And if that really is true, and he's been able to overcome that and get back to 100%, I'm really interested to see what he can do at 100% back in there, because he's a scary man.
I agree with everything you just said. You know, the disease really set him back, and I'm sure he's like a lot of mixed martial artists that are in the game at the high level. They feel as though mentally they're ready to get back in it, but physically they're simply not. So that drive to want to compete, to train, is way above the body's ready to perform. And that may be where he was at some point in his career. You know, he beat it in terms of medically and the surgeries, and he's back on track, but he just wasn't 100%. And so, well, I tell you what, if he really has beaten this, and you know, God bless him for that, and he's back on his feet and he's ready to really make a comeback, I would like to see Brock at his best and see what he can do. Because I watched him when he was in Minnesota and trained. I mean, I was just in awe of this guy, how he looked and how he wrestled and how he manhandled people. It wasn't just flukes. It was he was just at the top, and of course, he used his body and his mind to go out and to do great things, I think.
I'm just going to put it out there, Pat. Any chance that you guys might be related? I mean, you're both very scary individuals, so.
I think we're probably related, brothers from another mother. You know, he acts at a very, very high level, very accomplished and successful. And I just happen to probably have the same mindset at a much lower, skill ability level. You know, I push myself as hard as I possibly can. That's where I get my high. High to me is like, can I run 7 miles faster than I've ever run it before at midnight? Or, you know, how many push-ups can I do? How mad would you have to be to swim a mile in the ocean? I mean, things like that. So probably similar that way, but, you know, genetically and skill-wise, and he's got a whole lot going on. And, I revere that guy a lot. I respect what he has done, and not always what he says and what he does, but then again, that happens in sports anyway. People find a niche, and, you know, for all I know, people are telling him to act a certain way because it's selling tickets, it's getting promotions, you know. For me, I'm just a plain old man, an amateur's amateur. I love to train. I love to train with people who love to train. I like being around people who are willing to sacrifice to go the extra mile. I like being around people who are willing to push themselves to a limit where they've never been. And I kudos to everybody who does that. That's the environment I love. I thrive in that environment.
Well, Pat, it's fun when you say that you try to push yourself and that's how you get your high, is doing athletic feats and trying to better yourself. How great is it from a coaching perspective to give that sort of discipline to high school athletes and get them to be better and set themselves up, whether it be for success on the mat or also just later on in their life and whatever they do, with the discipline that you put out before them?
That's why I do it. That's why I'm still in the coaching game. You know, early on, you know, like 20-plus years ago, you know, my brother and I were coaching, my brother John, whom, by the way, is probably the best coach I've ever had in my entire wrestling career. We were always pushing for state titles and individual championships. And, of course, we still do that, and that's what we do. But it's really important to be able to help shape kids in that practice room and to get them to push themselves, to realize things that they've never have realized about themselves, whether it's, you know, time management, physical capabilities, know their limits, press beyond their limits. And, you know, I've been in the game long enough, so I see a lot of former wrestlers who, you know, a big part of their life is the moments they've spent in that practice room. and the lessons that they were given that they didn't know then, but as they grow into be men and some into women, they understand what we were doing. We were giving them a whole, you know, helping a worth of life right in front of them, how hard it is to get up and go and push forward when the chips are down. And that's what I like to do in the practice room. You know, everybody's equally worthy. Everybody is all of our attention, and we ask each and every person in our practice room to make sure that when they come in through that door, they realize that they're not just individuals. They belong to a program that has an idea that we together are a team. And that's what I hear about. Most people speak to me that the team, the comradeship, the tough practices, those are the things that are sticking in their mind.
Talk about how that translates over to when you're at Young's MMA, because, you know, that is widely known as the premier gym in the state and one of the very best in all of New England, headed by Chris Young. He's a great coach, an unbelievable guy, and there's so many killers that train there at that gym. What has it been like since you've been there, putting in work, getting ready to make your much-anticipated title fight against Volato? How has it been for you walking into the gym every day and training there with everyone at the gym?
Well, it's really been a privilege, in my view, because, you know, when I went in there 4 years ago and started to meet some of the guys, and I was getting a really good introduction into being choked out and tapped out and beat up, because wrestling is a really good pedigree to have, but at the same token, MMA wrestling is completely different. So when I go in there now, I feel like I'm a part of what they are and who they are, in part of the fabric. You know, I come from the same stock of work hard and work harder. And yeah, I work with D. Ryan Sanders, and I work with Hook On, Josh Harvey, who's around, Aaron Relentless, Lacey, CJ Ewer, Pretty Boy. Those guys have taught me so much. And, you know, they're not always in the gym at the same time, but when I go in and I am there to train, I get a, you know, an hour and a half drive behind me, I leave there feeling as though I've learned something. And we are friends. You know, we do talk, we do chat. And Chris Young, I'll tell you what, when I see him coach, he has a way of, one of the reasons why I think Young's is so successful, obviously, is because of the talent that they have there now and upcoming. But Chris, you know, as a coach myself for just a few years, listening to him coach and watch him explain things in the way that he does it, it's so applicable. He's got a gift to be able to know what he needs to have done, know what's important at the time, and demand it from the guys and the gals, and that's what he gets. So when I go in there, I know I'm in an environment where I can give what I have, and I'm going to leave there with something that I didn't have when I came. And the idea behind the Championship Factory, is behind his coaching ideologue, is that you need to make sure that you drill, 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 prepare, prepare, prepare. You don't just get off the couch and come in. And so that whole idea behind, for me going up, there's something that draws me there, is because when I go there, I know that at the end of that day, that session, that I'm going to have had probably my fill of whatever I needed.
Pat, do you ever wish that mixed martial arts had been more popular earlier on in your career?
Oh, just about every day.
Just
about every day.
Yeah, how far do you think you could have been in this game by now if you had been an MMA fighter immediately after college and the sport was at the level it is right now?
That's a good question, and I really don't know. I like to think that had it been, you know, had I had the opportunity, that I would have not left any stone unturned. Let's just say that I would have done what all of you guys are doing now, making sure that I'm always ready to go, learning, drilling, training, always prepared, good diet, and have my sights set at the top and keep pecking away till I get there. I've done it with wrestling, you know, to a mediocre level, you know, at the New England level, but, you know, to be in a promotion where you're really fighting the best, it would have been a great opportunity, but it wasn't meant to be. And I tell you, I don't think I'd trade in what I've got now for anything now, looking back. I'm just an amateur's amateur. I like to train. I like to fight. A fighter's in me. I can't explain it, but I have to show it. And it's through workouts. It's through late night runs, early morning runs. Two sessions a day on a Saturday, just because making sure that when I go up to Young's, that I'm in shape enough so that I can be of help. I like to be a good teammate. I like to be a good partner. If somebody has a camp, I want to be ready so that when we go at each other, I'm ready to give them what they need to get to where they want to be. And that's part of my mindset of what keeps me always going here is that I want to be ready to fight myself, but also for my teammates.
Well, Pat, I'm sorry, go right ahead.
And so had I had the opportunity, I'd like to think that I would have at least given it a good shot.
And I'm sure you would have been very successful if you did have that opportunity when MMA was bigger back then. Let's talk about June 17th, the night you captured the NEF amateur lightweight title in beating former champ Rafael Velado. When did you decide that you wanted to go after that belt? And what was that training camp like in preparation for Velado? And then talk about the actual fight and what you thought you were gonna see in there and what ended up happening?
Three really great questions. First off, going after the belt, I felt like I'd spent, 3.5-4 years of training at Young's, some with injuries, some with not. And I was 3-0, and I had a couple of good fights. I felt like I was getting better. So, I'd seen, Raph, and he went against Jimmy Jackson, who was a really great guy and a great competitor, and he ended up subbing him out, and I knew that Jimmy had a lot more in him. And just thinking to myself, to be honest with you, Raph had beaten a couple of Young's guys. I felt like I was a Young's guy, and I said, well, let's see if he can go 3-for-3, and I don't think he can, in my mind. So, but I felt not embarrassed, but a little bit hesitant, because I didn't want to step on anybody's toes, I'm just in this for a lot of the fun, and I love to compete. But I mentioned it to Matt Peterson at one point during a wrestling meeting, and I mentioned it to Chris that, I'd like to see if I can bring that belt back to Young's if people think that would be a good matchup. And it obviously took hold, and eventually got a message from Matt Peterson, and Coach thought it was a good idea, so we went for it. The belt meant a lot to me because I felt in my mind, sort of setting things up that more than a championship for me was bringing it back to Young's. Josh Harvey had held it before he went pro, and so there's a lot of complex motivations there for me to want to win a belt. And, the actual camp itself was good, but it was tough. I was injured a few times along it, and I had to kind of suck that up and, divert a little bit, do a little bit more, cross-training and offset training than I would normally have done. But, again, Chris Young was right there. He just seems to read every situation the way it needs for every individual and really recommended what I needed to do, and I followed it like an athlete would to his coach, which is interesting to me. Here I am 53, coach is a lot younger, and that's my coach. I love that. I love having a coach who can really look at you and kind of dissect you as a person and know what's good for you. So he pushed me pretty hard. And I really enjoyed it, and a lot of thanks to a lot of the professionals and some of the amateurs up there that really were there during my training sessions to push me.
Did you get shark tanked at the end of the camp?
Yeah, I did. That was a blast. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I love that. In fact, I would have felt odd if I hadn't gotten shark tanked. And, those guys, the guys that I train with at Young's and gals, I'll tell you what, they don't hold anything back. They push. And I think that's part of the fabric of what – it's just natural. It's just what's expected. It's what is done. You get pushed to your edge and then see where you lie there, But as far as the fight goes, I'll be honest with you, Brian, I'm not a striker by any means. I know many people have told me that, they've been in the game for 8-10 years. They're still working on the striking. I've been in this for 4 years, and I would say that my striking is not as bad as it used to be, but it's still on the brink of horrible, and I get it. But, and I'm working on it all the time, but it's a discipline that's very difficult for me. And I think if people watch me, they get sort of the right impression but the wrong impression. One, the right impression is that my striking needs a lot of work, but that my strikes hurt when they hit. So I guess I felt like I'm going to just throw bombs when I can get them out there. Whatever I bring to the table inside that cage is what I'm going to bring. I know what I'd like to do, but will that come to fruition when the fight's on? And if I can get a finger on somebody, I feel comfortable inside that cage because then I can kind of close the gap more and more and more, get that clinched feeling, and I'm at home. But the plan was, I respect Raph a lot. He's an undefeated champ, heck of a fighter, heck of a guy. And coach says, you know, we're going to do this on our feet. And I'm like, wow. Me striking on my feet is, to myself, was really not the plan that I had. But I followed it the way that it needed to be done. You know, we went to the mat. I threw a couple of bombs and learned my back up and wanted to see if I could do it on my feet. And as it turned out, I was able to do that.
Yeah, and it was
Raph's a very strong guy. He's a very quick guy. He's very agile. He's a heck of a fighter, and I wanted to make sure that I showed him that respect when I was in there.
And it was a really great fight. You as you said, you stuck right to the game plan. Obviously, Raph is really skilled on the ground. His jiu-jitsu is a real high level. Were you worried at any point where if you did use your wrestling and you got it to the ground, that that might be a little bit in Raph's world where he might be able to lock up a submission?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I guess there's two kinds of fighters and some sort of wrestlers. There's a wise wrestler and they're not wise one. When he sort of, I didn't really take him down. I mean, that first one, he kind of he pulled guard right there. He jumped down. And I was throwing some, pretty good haymakers on top of him. But I could see him, shrimping around, and I knew what he was going for. You know, those guys, those BJJ guys, they're just tough dudes. And they can make you think you're doing fine. And then all of a sudden lock something in that just makes you just have to either get injured or tap. And I wasn't. The whole game plan, the whole camp was not to do that. Take him down, then throw a few, let him back up. If that came to that, and that's what I did. So I guess ultimately for me, with my pedigree, to be on top and to let him up was a whole lot of respect for Raph, because I feel very comfortable on top. I feel on one side of me that with him I would put a hurting on him and I would not get submitted. But in reality, the guy's a BJJ black belt. I'm not going to go there in his world if I don't need to. And I didn't, so I let him up.
Now, you have a 4-0 record in your amateur career. I have a question for you. Do you get a Christmas card from the Bang family?
I don't. I have never gotten one.
How unique is it?
I'll be looking for one, though.
Yeah, how unique is it that first you beat Steve Bang Jr., then you face his father, and it both is the same result, a victory for you?
Yes. Well, I tell you, with the younger Steve Jr., I went into that fight with a lot of respect. I sort of, with my experience, I thought, okay, he's 3-1, and I'm 1-0, and to me, it was like one of those personal, kind of a shut up fight. Let's put him against Kelly, the old guy, against the younger guy who's going to shut me up, and it could have very well happened. I don't know. Maybe he wasn't in shape, or maybe he took me lightly, or maybe I was better than I thought I was. I don't know. But it was a good fight. We both went at each other. We both grappled hard and threw some good bombs and whatnot, and I just happened to, just have a little more in my tank than he did at that case, and then I was able to, get him down and finish the fight. But his father, it might have been a better fight, I caught him with a couple of good rights and lefts, and, that was all it wrote for there. So had I not got him early in the 30 seconds in the round, it might have been a much better fight. Because if there's anything I'm learning about, fighting, is that anything can happen at any time. You can get knocked out, tapped out, make a quick, one little seemingly insignificant mistake, and then that could cost you the bout right there. I understand that, so I'm always thinking about that as I'm training and I'm in the cage. So I wouldn't say I'm really lucky, but luck is when preparation meets opportunity, and I'll never step into that cage ever unless I'm prepared, which means a good camp and a good mental focus and prepare for my opponent. I think the sport deserves that.
So Pat, when will you be prepared next to defend your NEF lightweight belt?
It's a great question. November wouldn't be too early, but if I couldn't do November, probably because of my schedule and my coaching, it wouldn't be until April or whenever they held after the next one after February. Perhaps February if it wasn't on a weekend where I had a regional or state meet.
And is there any opponent that comes to mind when you look at the NEF, pool of fighters in the lightweight division? Who do you think makes the most sense?
That's a good question, and I'm going to be honest with you. And I hope it. I don't really know. There's a lot of good lightweights out there around New England, Maine and New England, and whoever the promotion thinks has, earned it or is ready to go. you know, I don't have the throw anybody at me kind of attitude, but I did win the belt and it is out there, and I do want to defend it. I think that's, to me, that's a noble thing to do, and I'll defend it against whoever in the promotion thinks should do that, and my coach thinks that the one that you should go do it against. So I publicly say I want to defend it, and if whoever gets in the cage with me can beat me, then I'll be the first to shake their hands. Because it probably would be, win or lose, probably in my heart of hearts, it would be my exit. Because I'm undefeated now, which really doesn't mean much. But I do have the belt. I know somebody's going to want it, like I wanted it, hunger. And I'm willing to step in that cage and see if someone can take it. And should they do that, hey, kudos to you, enjoy it. And, I might focus on something else.
So is that basically the career path for you? You're going to continue to fight until you ultimately do lose for the first time?
Yeah, well, it might be. It's like one of those things where I think, I have the belt, I think you have to defend it. And that's my goal. And I definitely am a fight-to-fight person. And, after this fight, a lot of my brothers and a lot of my fans, you need to go out on top, you're undefeated. To me, this is not about trying to save a record or anything and going pro. I'm loving this, man. I have aches and pains like everybody else, but my body says go. My mentality says go harder. So I'm going to keep pushing this thing until I can't.
Yeah,
until something says, you're done. So after this fight, mentally it was tough. I was a little banged up. But mentally, I've kicked over a lot of dirt and spent a lot of time in the woods and just thinking, about how blessed I am and how, what's next. And I've come to the point now where I've had some time behind me that I want to defend this thing. And I want to do it right. I want to do it to, I don't call anybody out. It doesn't matter to me. Not in a bad way, but just whoever, the promotion thinks would be a good matchup. And if coach says, yeah, that's a good one, we should do that, then I'm on board.
Now, Pat, you mentioned that your body is still feeling really good. But, Father Time catches up with all of us. It hits, all of us at different points in our lives where we can't compete at the level where we once did. What's the difference with how your body recovers now after a hard training session versus when you were younger? Because obviously we all know MMA training is unbelievably grueling, and sometimes you wake up the next morning and it's tough to get out of bed. Is it a lot harder for you now? Are you noticing that?
Well, what a great question. And yes, it is much harder. And even though in the beginning I was thinking that, I'm training hard, I'm really going at it, I have to rest more. And what I mean by that is, a lot more hydration and a lot more stretching and making sure I get my sleep, bet to bed earlier, or knowing when to take a nap. Those kinds of things, I tell you what, naps, believe it or not, this last year or so have really saved me, even if it's 20 minutes to an hour. Rest. I'll be the first to say, even though I've admitted it to myself and I understand this now, that I've lost not just one step, but many steps in my game. I get it. I'm not as fast. I'm not as agile. I'm not as quick. I'm not as fast to recover. But I try to make up for that in this thing called grit, which I just, I understand that, I'm going to miss some things. I understand I'm going to be able to do the things I did, 15 years ago. But my internal fire, my desire, that thing that resides, that it factor, still burns to compete. And so knowing that I've lost in many steps and not quite so agile, I go into it with even more reverence to overcome that as best I can.
Well, Pat, I got to tell you, and this is from the bottom of my heart too, you truly are an inspiration to me. And even though I am, younger than you, I've been at a point in my life right now where I'm, wanting success in certain areas of my life, and I want stability and this and that, and I feel like I should have them, at this point. But when I look at, what you're doing right now, it really is, it puts things into perspective for me, and it just makes me understand that hard work, perseverance, and you got all the time in the world to do whatever it is that you want to do, as long as you, bite down on your mouthpiece, so to speak, and show that grit and grind through it like you're doing. So, again, it's been a true pleasure to watch you win that belt over Raf, and we really can't wait to see you back in there defending your belt soon.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been wonderful to chat with you guys. You got us so right. We all have time. It's just priorities. It really it comes down to that. Your priorities of what you want to do. And the time is there, maybe a little bits and pieces. You may not always have 2 hours, maybe 20 minutes. But what I just wanted to say, just in parting, that Chris Young, Ernie Fitch, Dave Lord, Dale Hart, Levi Sewell, those guys have really been my major coaches. And Brian Sanders, like Josh Harvey, Relentless Aaron Lacy, C.J. Ewer, Pretty Boy Boynton, those guys, I want them to know that when I come up and train with them, they have motivated me and shown me and guided me and pushed me to, to what little fighter I am today. And I wanted to thank them very much.
Absolutely. And, both Brian and myself really hope we get the opportunity to meet you in person here in the very near future.
Okay, man. Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time.
And also, happy early birthday for next week, too.
Thank you. Yeah, it's going to be a good one.
You got it. Have a great weekend, Pat. We'll talk soon.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
The main event is sponsored by Sea Dog Brewing Company. The Sea Dog is located on 26 Front Street on the Penobscot River here in Bangor. You can call them at 947-8009, or you can find them at seadogbrewing.com. A couple of new exciting beers you need to go check out at the Sea Dog. They have a new Sea Dog Pale Ale that is just delicious, and also a Deep Stowage IPA that is very popular and bringing a lot of people down to the Sea Dog to try these new two beers. While you're down there, you might as well check out another exciting event that the Sea Dog is going to be hosting. As always, they are going to have their second annual Sunfish Festival that is Saturday, August 19th from 12 p.m. all the way till 10 p.m. at night. And they have a few exciting acts for you. Hambone is going to be performing from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. DJ MC will be there from 4 to 7, and the Ultra Boys will be coming on at 9:30 p.m. to close out the night. All this is going to be happening at 26 Front Street in Bangor. The Sea Dog is where it's at. Make sure you go check it out. Sea Dog.
Just like that, another great edition of the main event in the books. What are we at, 71 now?
Today was 71.
71. Doesn't seem possible. It's been over a year since we started this endeavor, and 71 episodes deep. We're going to start planning that big triple-digit show here soon.
I know. I don't know what we could do. We got to do something special.
I think GSP, Connor, both on the show to announce their big matchup coming up.
Wow, that would be something special if that happened.
Well, speaking of the show, 71 deep, one of the people we've had on more than any other. I mean, there's Chris Young, Aaron Lacy. We were looking back, and we've had Matt Kendall Denning quite a bit, too. But one of the guys we absolutely adore when we have on the show because he doesn't pull any punches back is the Ryan Sanders. And why don't you tell us a little bit, Ryan, about his social media exploits over the last week or so?
Well, it's really nothing new. I mean, it's some of the same stuff he's been saying for a while now. He wants a couple of in particular fights.
Yep.
He wants Nate the Snake Andrews, who just beat Pretty Boy Bruce Boyington at the last CES card, CES 45, or he wants Luis Felix again. And the only reason why he wants Luis Felix is just because of he was ranked ahead of him in some. I'm not sure. What that was, but Ryan's already beat Luis Felix, but the way that from what Ryan said, the way that the CES handled that, and they basically ignored it and whatnot, it's left a sour taste in Ryan's mouth, and he wants to go put an exclamation point on that fight him again and beat him even worse than he did the first time. If that fight doesn't happen, Nate Andrews is the guy he wants, and Nate Andrews looks to be pretty legitimate. So either one of those guys, I'd be excited to see Ryan go up against. And he's also mentioned that he wants to get on that Bellator card when they come to they come up to the Northeast here in October. So a lot of exciting stuff. And Ryan, as you know, he doesn't hold any punches, as you said earlier. And he's very open to let you know what's on his mind.
I think with the Felix thing, it was more of that if Nate doesn't want to fight him, he wants another good quality opponent. And beating Felix again would at least jettison him up again, saying, hey, Bellator, sign me now. Mm-hmm. Or, hey, Dana White, put me on the Contender Series or sign me outright to a contract. You know I can win. I've beat this top caliber of opponent after beating Jay Ellis in the first round again and haven't lost in over a year at that point, too. But for Andrews, it just seems like he wants to finally say, hey, let's do this thing. I know you don't want to come up and fight in Maine. You don't see any interest in it for you. He's like, I'll fight you anywhere, but if you're going to fight my teammate in Bruce and beat him in the second round, why don't you fight me at this big-time card, in which could help your career, too? Mm-hmm. I mean, why wouldn't Bellator want that fight? You'd have two of the best lightweights in the Northeast fighting for your promotion, whether it be on the televised part of it or even on the undercard to draw some fans into it. I think they'd be... That's a no-brainer if I'm the Bellator promotion.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a no-brainer. And again, that would be a fight that would draw a lot of fans in the Northeast to that promotion, yep, to see the fight card. You know, I'm all for it. I want to see Ryan Sanders start to get the fights that he deserves. I'm not saying anything bad about Jay Ellis. Jay Ellis came to fight, yep, and he dropped Ryan, and he put some good ground and pound on him. But Jay Ellis is not, at this stage of Ryan's career, I feel like he's a little bit past that level of competition. He should be getting
record speaks for itself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I would say, too, I'm not sure how much damage Andrews took in that fight for CES, but hey, that was last weekend. We'll see. October 22nd, if my math is correct or my scheduling is correct, that would be roughly 2 months since he fought. So I'm not sure if he could theoretically do it, but why wouldn't you pass up an opportunity? Why would you, I should say, pass up an opportunity to go to Bellator and fight on that card, wherever it would be? So,
and also, we got to give a big shout out to our photographer,
Ed
Trocianic.
Yeah.
He went down and covered that CES 45 fight card, and you know, got some really fantastic pictures. So thank you, Ed. Anybody that wants to look at Ed's stuff, you can go to combatsportphoto.com and check that out, or you can go to Trocianic Photography as well. Ed's a great guy, and again, just want to give him a shout out and thank you for all that you're doing for us.
You're going to spell Trocianic for us too?
It's TROSCIENIC.
Okay, well, if you get it wrong, Ed's going to be probably texting you.
Yeah, he probably will.
So, yeah, that's a fight I do want to see, especially with some fighters that we know, and we know Ryan is a monster, too, so hopefully that gets done, or at least the next opponent for the Ryan Sanders is going to be one that can elevate his career to the UFC or to Bellator here in the future. Last thing, Ryan, before we go here, I have to ask you, there was a little, I'm not sure if it was a prop, but it was more of a proposed question on Twitter. So we know about the odds, we know about the underdog that is Conor McGregor, though the betting in Vegas kind of has him a little bit closer than I think he should be in the sports betting books in Vegas for that fight, considering he's facing a guy who might be the pound-for-pound greatest boxer of all time. But regardless, another lopsided competitor is also stepping in for probably the greatest pound-for-pound fighter right now in MMA today, Ray Borg, taking on Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson. So, if you had to pick an underdog, who has the better chance of winning their fight, respectively? Is it Ray Borg fighting Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson in the sport that he has trained in his whole life, or Conor McGregor fighting in boxing for the first time, making his pro debut against one of the greatest of all time in his sport?
Why do you do this to me?
This is a proposed question, because I was thinking about it, and I said, man, this is tough, but I know where I'd go on it.
Yeah. I know where you'd go, too. You'd take Borg.
I would take Borg, because he's fighting in his sport.
Yeah.
And Mighty Mouse, he's been tremendous. I still think there is a possibility he could get beat if he gets the right punch thrown at him. He might get dropped, and then who knows what happens if he goes to the ground. Maybe loses it for a second, then gets in a submission. Who knows?
Yeah. And I completely understand where you're coming from there.
But you're going to go Conor, aren't you?
I'd have to. I have to go Conor, man. I got to do it. Look, you know, all he needs is for that one big shot for that left to land and stun Mayweather, and then he can capitalize on it. You saw what he did to Malignaggi. That's just the beginning. The thunder is coming. August 26th, the Irish nation, Ireland's going to be over there representing in Vegas. It's coming. You wait. You can sit there stunned all you want.
I have nothing else to say.
I'm not getting off I am the captain of the Conor hype
Captain
train.
Captain Conor hype train right over here. I love Conor. I love that he's making probably $100 million when all is said and done. How does the taxes work on that? I know since he's an Irish citizen, he's probably still going to pay the federal taxes, but no state income tax, right?
I'm not the guy to ask when it comes to that kind of money, because I can't even fathom.
And good for the UFC to make some cash, too, and maybe Floyd can pay his taxes, too, after all is said and done.
Right.
I'm still going to take Ray Borg. I don't think he wins, and he's a heavy underdog in that one, too, but again, give me the guy who's fighting in this sport.
And I understand that point.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be it for the 71st edition of the main event. We've got some things brewing for you, though, for the next edition. We've got our Conor McGregor-Floyd Mayweather fight preview one, too, which we'll have some special guests. We'll hear from some insiders, too. We've got a little bit of sound that we recorded back two NEF events ago with James Buster Douglas. He's got some pretty good insight I think we'll be able to include on that one. And we'll also hear from, I think, Pete Zimbora, among some other ones, to talk about that fight from different perspectives. So looking forward to that. And we've got some other great guests on the horizon, too. I don't know if you want to maybe what the whistle a little bit on some potential things here, Ryan?
Well, you know, I've talked to a couple of guys outside of the NEF that have had some big wins. The new CES heavyweight champion, Juliano Coutinho, he's going to be coming on the show here soon. Manny Bermudez, yep. We've had him on before. He's going to be coming back. Many others. I've also spoke to Heather Hardy.
Big fan.
But yeah, of the Bellator promotion. She's going to be coming on. There's just a laundry list of guests, Brian, but that's just a couple to wet your whistle.
Yeah, I like that. And sure, there's going to be more and more names to come here, too, as we try to achieve here in the near future, very near future.
World domination.
We'll have world domination and also probably twice weekly episodes, too. So you don't even just have to have us once a week. You can have us twice a week.
Oh, cool.
Or just re-listen to the episodes, too. We're perfectly fine with that.
Yeah, that's
great.
Fine, too.
So look forward to that one and other certain secret things also potentially brewing from this show.
And if you wanted to do something that involved brewing, why not go to the Sea Dog?
Oh, yeah, good
brewing company.
Good plug
here
there, too.
In Bangor, which is our main sponsor. So while you're waiting for our next show to come out, go down there and have a blue paw.
Or maybe even listen to the show with headphones on, of course, because you don't want to inconvenience other people who might be enjoying
that's
themselves.
Right.
So I'm sure they'd love it. But.
Yeah, be the weird guy at the bar. Sit at the bar with your headphones on, plugged into your iPhone, and order a blue paw. And when they ask you what you're doing, say, I'm listening to the main event.
Yeah, and you should, too. And while you're there, get them subscribed on iTunes. Have them rate the show a 5-star if they want to. If they don't, then don't rate it a 5-star. Just put the phone down or whatever. By the way, I haven't told you this, Ryan. This is breaking news here as well.
Dun, dun, dun.
If you do not have an iPhone and you've been saying, oh, I listen to the show on Podomatic or whatever, but I'd like a nice, easy way to digest the show as well and maybe get it right to my phone too, but I have an Android device and it's so hard. We are now on Google Play.
There you go.
We are on Google Play, and we will soon be on even more avenues to be able to download the show than ever before. That's coming in the next coming days and weeks as well, but we are on iTunes and Google Play now, so you can enjoy us and even more platforms than ever before.
Yeah, I look forward to just keeping on growing, Brian.
Well, that's going to do it for Ryan Jarrell and myself, Brian Stackpole. We'll be back here very soon with the next edition, number 72 of the main event. But until then, peace.